Well, as mentioned, we are glad to have you all back and glad to have a room full this morning. 2 weeks ago, we began a series that we're doing for the month of January. Now, with 1 week off, we'll go into a little bit into February. But this idea of vocation, this idea of calling, and Danny kicked us off and showed us how it's much more than just what you do, much more than just your employment. It's just a lot more than your job. And that is very much true, and we're going to get into some more of those aspects. Today I'm going to kind of focus on the aspect of your work and your job, the calling, at least typically between 9 and 5, Monday through Friday, what that looks like. For some of you, it's more like 5 to 9, but that's a different story. But anyway, I want to kind of begin in a different way. And Danny started this thought, but I want to kind of trace it out a little bit this morning, because I want to show you how you play a part in God's work in the world by what you do. And I want to look at this morning on how dependent we are on so many people doing what they need to do so that we can do what we do. Okay? So just kind of bear with me this morning. Humor me a little bit. But I want you to see this morning how dependent you are upon others. Okay? So when you woke up this morning, you woke up in a bed, in a mattress that someone, somewhere, made, right? With blankets that covered you, that were made by a company or a seamstress. You put your feet in some slippers by the slipper maker or the slipper manufacturer. It was probably a little bit chilly, so you went over to the thermostat and you turned it up, which relies upon an HVAC man that installed it as well as maintains it, and a natural gas company making sure that there is natural gas that is flowing to your house so that you can turn it up and poof, it becomes warmer. You went to the bathroom and you hit the light switch, and lo and behold, the light's turned on, right? Why? Because there is electricity in your house that comes from the electrical company and the electrician that wired that house. You went to the shower and you turned it on and the water began to flow. Why? Because the water company has that water continually coming to your house, and it is clean, it is pure, so it doesn't get you sick or unhealthy. While in the shower, hopefully you used a little soap and shampoo, and we appreciate that. Thank you for doing so, to wash yourself. A towel to dry yourself. You got out and you got dressed in clothes made by someone that put them together and made specifically to your body size and your body type. You did your hair. Perhaps ladies put on a little bit of makeup. By the way, all of you looking very nice this morning, so appreciate that. You went downstairs. You made some eggs or bacon or oatmeal or cereal. Again, thanks to the farmers, and thanks to the people at the grocery store that got it there so that you could purchase it, so you could bring it home, so it would be ready, so it would be fresh. You used pots and pans and plates and silverware, again, made by others. You made some coffee, drank some coffee, because some dude in South America grew some coffee beans on a mountainside so that you could have that fresh roast in the morning. With that, some other dudes roasted it for you, right? Or dudettes, we don't want to discriminate here, so that you could have that fresh roast just like you like it. by the way, all of those products that I just mentioned rely upon some transportation for them to get there, to get to the store, or perhaps even just directly to your doorstep, okay? All in packaging that kept them safe and kept them fresh. All right, let's keep going. You got in a car. that was made by those at the car manufacturing plant that is maintained by your maintenance man, running on fuel from those at the gas station, and washed by people at the car wash. While driving, you enjoyed music played by musicians using some type of streaming from a streaming platform or from the radio station itself. You drove on roads and bridges that were planned by city planners, designed by engineers, made by construction workers, and maintained by the maintenance crew. You stopped at stoplights that were put up by city officials and workers to direct that traffic. You were made safe because of police officers maintaining public safety around us. You came to church and you were able to open the doors because the doors were open and not locked and the lights were on and it was nicely heated. And here you had your maybe second cup or third cup of coffee, right? And ate some donuts that, you know, magically just descended out of heaven for you so that they could be there. Wait, maybe not. Maybe because some deacons had them ready for you so that you could enjoy them. Right? You sat on some chairs that were made and manufactured and constructed, all to listen to this joker go on and on, okay? All right, what's the point of that whole exercise? If you think about it, that was all the different individual people that you were reliant upon, depended upon, just this morning, right? Just in a 2 to 3 hour span. And that goes on all day, all week, all year. And so I would say it's easy to estimate on a conservative side that this morning you've relied upon at least 1,000 people to do all that they needed to do so that you can do what you can do, okay? And I say very conservatively, okay? Because I think I can give an example. Let me maybe put Jordan on the spot here. Jordan, how many people work at Chick-fil-A, just corporate? Spencer's. 2,500 just in Chick-fil-A corporate, okay? Also that you can just have your waffle fries and nuggets, right, when you go through the drive-through, okay? How about, where's Radney at? Did he go? Is he teaching? Is he? Okay. I was going to ask him. Radney works for Georgia DOT, but same thing. Thousands and thousands of people. Okay. All of which have to do their job. Okay. Now is everybody dipping the waffle fries into the oil so that you can have them? No, but everybody from corporation all the way down to the restaurant level has to do that in order for you to have your hot steaming fries. So there he is. Radney, how many people are Georgia DOT?
3,642.
Wow. See, there you go. That's the kind of precision that we know does not exist at Georgia DOT. So. but the point of all of this is how many of those people, those thousands of people, did we thank this morning? The reality is we probably didn't thank any of them because we've learned to expect all of those things. But if you think about it, if just one of those things was not there or not working, it would throw a wrench completely or entirely into our schedule, our routine, and no doubt we would complain about it, right? We're not grateful for it, but if it doesn't happen, we complain about it. So again, just to give you another example of that. So this was last week. Stephanie texted me, said, hey, before you come home, I got everything else, but I don't have coconut cream. We eat a lot of coconut cream in our house. which we really enjoy, but you all can't enjoy it because it's hard to find sometimes. So anyway, I went to Publix, and the whole shelf was out except one can, okay? And you better believe that I was frustrated, right? How dare they not have my coconuts from Southeast Asia creamed up in a can so that I can go there on a Tuesday and get them, okay? We have become so entirely ungrateful that we've missed the point. And so the point is that, you know, you're not going to be able to thank all the people that do provide for you. I mean, thank the ones that you can, okay? Thank, you know, Jordan for your waffle fries and nuggets, or better yet, maybe thank Britta for allowing him to do what he does by staying home and teaching the kids. And thank the deacons, right, for the coffee and donuts. Thank the people that you can thank, but most are faceless and nameless. So we can't thank them, but do we thank the God that provides for us in all of these things, that provides through all of these means? And that's what this exercise demonstrates. First of all, it demonstrates how utterly dependent we are, right? How utterly dependent we are. First, upon others. You know, this idea that I'm my own person, I need nobody or nothing, just how foolish that thought ultimately is. If those people don't do what they need to do, we can't do what we do, okay? We would literally be whining and complaining or literally we would be perhaps dead, right? Because of things that are safety issues. And that's just humans. Just think how dependent we are upon other humans. How much more God, who needs to do what he needs to do in order for the world to operate. Okay, I know this is very hypothetical, never happened, but what if God was like, you know what, I'm kind of tired today. I don't think I'm going to go to work. I don't think I'm going to make the sun rise, the world turn. I don't think that I'm going to have that perfect combination of oxygen and carbon dioxide for these people. It puts a different meaning to in him we live and move and have our being. And the point is this, when we're thinking about this on the realm of vocation and calling, and specifically of work, that we need all of these things from the sun rising and the sun setting to the barista having our coffee ready at Starbucks. It's all a part of the work of God, that God is at work in the world, either directly or indirectly. And that's how we should see our work, our vocation, our labor, is that it's God at work in and through us, that has made us, that has created us, that has gifted us, that has given us the ability to do what we do so that we can play our small little part in the world. And I, for one, am super grateful for people that have some wonderful gifts and talents and abilities that I do not possess, okay? My wife will tell you that I am the worst handyman in the world, and that usually I make things a whole lot worse when I get into them than better. But I'm thankful for people that are good with their hands and that can do that type of work and labor, because I am completely dependent upon them. That is because God has made them and gifted them and given them the ability to do what they do so that this work, this provision can happen in the world. And so that is the very practical example of what we talk about when we speak of God's providence. Okay, this idea of providence oftentimes is this a very theological term. Well, no, if you understand it correctly, it's God working in the world, right? So our definition from the Westminster is this: God's, this is from the Shorter Catechism, God's work of providence is his most holy, wise, and powerful, preserving and governing all his creatures and all their actions. And I particularly like the larger catechism that adds just two little phrases that says that it's his most holy, wise, and powerful, preserving and governing all his creatures, ordering them and all their actions to his own glory. So you have this idea of governing and preserving and ordering all the actions of all the things that are taking place in the world, from the smallest things all the way to the biggest things. Again, how many of those things that we don't even understand, that we just take for granted? Again, that I can have my can of coconut cream sitting there on the shelf. How many things had to take place for it to arrive right in that space so that I can pick it up and be able to take it home and eat it and enjoy it, all right? I never think about that, right? But all of that is part of God's ordering and preserving in this earth. And so we have to see it as God at work, to the point that we can say that God healed me, God talked to me, God fed me. Now, the normal process is that God uses a doctor, right, to heal, a pastor to talk to you, and a cook to feed you. But if we understand it rightly, that it's God that's at work, so that we would see his hand and his providence and his care and his love at work all the time in the earth. And so we had this question. One of Stephanie's friends texted her, and she was relaying a question that she received from another mom that has an 8-year-old. And the 8-year-old's question is, how can we believe in a God that we can't see? It's a great question for an 8-year-old, right? So this mom asked Stephanie's friend, who then asked Stephanie, who then asked me what we can say to this 8-year-old. And the problem is that we're not looking, right? That we are not seeing God. Yes, he is hidden from us, and that's a good thing because of his glory, because of his holiness, and because of our sinfulness. But that doesn't mean that his work isn't evident all around us, all the time. And he is using us as a part of that. Whatever one little part that is, that one little part that you play in this world, is part of that bigger work that God is doing. We are small little cogs, but those are important cogs as we understand it rightly. And so if we don't do our part, just like, you know, if the one person in the chain didn't do theirs, there would be problems. So too, if we didn't do our part, there would be issues. And so God is using you and doing so in your work. He is providing goods and services to a very needy and dependent world. And so when we understand that big picture, right, then we can kind of begin to hone in on this idea of vocation and calling, that it goes, yes, far beyond our work, because our fundamental call, and Danny touched on this 2 weeks ago, is to be human, which means that we are to be made in the image of God. We are to be imago Dei, image bearers, and therefore we are to reflect God in our work. Since God is at work and always has been, so too we ought to be at work. And it's fundamental to us as creatures. As Danny said, the work is not a part of the fall. The work was a part of what God created us to be. God created Adam and Eve to tend to the garden, right? Which was work. So we see this idea of work already ingrained into our creaturehood, who we are as image bearers. Now, work has become more difficult because of the fall. Obviously, we now work by the sweat of our brow, and our labor, and both physically as well as in child labor, child bearing, becomes difficult. But we have to understand this purpose of work, and when we understand it rightly, then we understand that there is incredible dignity given in and through work. That's why we should be, just as Christians, fundamentally opposed to programs like welfare programs that enable able-bodied people not to work. Because what we're doing is we're actually stealing away dignity from them that would otherwise come through their work. And so this idea of them not working and just receiving, it strikes at the core of who they are as individuals, as image bearers. And it's much more than just a paycheck, right? It's that dignity, it's that respect that is fundamental to your creaturehood. That's why the scripture says if someone doesn't work, they don't eat. That's more than just a threat. You know, if you don't do this, then you won't get that. No, if you don't work, you're actually denying your God likeness because of who we are as individuals. And that goes for even those that are retired, right? That you still have a work to do. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be for a paycheck, right? But as long as the Lord gives you strength, you have a work that is very fundamental and very essential. You know, I remember talking to my grandmother as she neared the end of her life, and, you know, she'd get very kind of sad. It feels like she couldn't do anything. She'd always say, well, at least I can pray. And I would always tell her, that's not the least. That's the most that you can do. And you can do that, and that is more than needed. You're doing your work if that is what God has called you to do. If that's the only strength that He's given you, enabled you to do, then do that. Work is a good thing, right? Like I said, it's not that it's not frustrating. It doesn't mean that it's always enjoyable. It's not. It's a blessing as well as a curse. It's satisfying as well as frustrating and exhausting, right? Every night you should sleep well if you've labored hard. But there's, even in that hard work, even in that difficult work, there's something that is soul satisfying. Okay, I love my vacation time, right? I love being able to go on vacation. I love being able to have that time to rest and to enjoy with my family. But I don't know about you, but vacation is never as soul satisfying as a good week of work. And that's why we need to continue to work, even if it's not, like I said, for a paycheck. And so when we think about that, we as Christians are called to use this work in a very different way than non-Christians would, right? Well, you might be doing the very same work. You might even be doing the same type of work. You might even be doing the same quality of work, although, you know, we as Christians should be doing excellent work for the glory of God, and that should motivate us far beyond the unbeliever. But even so, there's something fundamentally behind it that God has called us to in giving our work. Look at, just real briefly, John 17. This is Jesus' prayer, high priestly prayer. And this is gonna dovetail well into the sermon this morning as well. So not that I'm going to use this verse, but you'll have a little bit of the background. See, there's always benefits for coming to Sunday school. You get more of the story. John 17, verse 14. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. Do you see that? That we have this part to play, that we are not to be like the world. We're to live very differently from the world, but we are sent not only to be in the world, but we're sent to the world to do the work of Christ. Just as God the Father sent the Son, as it says, into the world, so I have sent you into the world. How is he primarily doing that? I'll tell you how he's primarily doing that. Through your work. Through your labor, right? That is your primary ministry. That is your primary mission. You know, people often talk about, you know, what is my ministry that I'm doing? And usually, you know, it's this extracurricular. And I'm not saying don't have those things. Do. But the main way that you're going to use your life for the glory of God is what you do 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And you shouldn't see that as separate from your ministry or your mission. No, that is your primary ministry and mission, is that you are doing a work ultimately to the glory of God and for the good of your neighbor, and to do so as a child of God, that is a part of your calling to God, that we are to love God, and we are to love our neighbor, and to use our good works for him. I think Danny said it. It's a great quote from Luther. God doesn't need your good works, but your neighbor does, right? And so we want to give good work for our neighbor, for the good and glory of God, as well as good of our neighbor. So therefore, it's to be done unto his glory. It's to be virtuous. It's to be ethical. We're to be hardworking individuals. We're to labor and labor well for his glory. We shouldn't have to have a time card or someone that has to watch over our shoulders to see what we are doing, right? That's is something that is needed for a child. You know, you always have to check in on what your children are doing, if they're doing it right or doing it at all. But for us that are adults, we should be doing it not because we're told to do it, not because we have to do it, but because we want to do it and want to do it well. And as much as we are to labor, then we're also meant to rest. That we're to work at our rest. And for some of us, that's very difficult, to work hard, but to rest equally hard. To rest well, to rest in the Lord, to Sabbath, okay? The Lord has given you a Sabbath. It's part of the Ten Commandments. We're to labor 6 days, but to use one day for rest. Physically, yes, but spiritually as well. We need that rest. It's part of our, again, our creaturehood. It's a reflection of God who labored 6 days and rested on the seventh. And so we have to you know, use that one day out of seven to rest, to Sabbath, to use your vacation time. Like I said, please do so. Don't think of that it's somehow meritorious to you know, brag about how little vacation time you use. No, use your vacation time. I tell this to Danny all the time. There's not many things that I'll fire him for, but the one thing that I will fire him for is if he doesn't use all of his vacation time, right? Because you need it. His family deserves it. And so he needs to take it out. How's he doing on that, Meredith, by the way? See, we need to, do I need to fire him? You're fired, Danny. I'll hire you again in a week. But so it's part of our calling to God. It's part of our calling to our neighbor. It's part of loving our neighbor. As I said, your work is your ministry. It's your mission. You're providing a product or service that's good for your neighbor. And therefore, it ought to be good work, right? A drug dealer or a prostitute or somebody that works in the porn industry, they're not doing good for their neighbor, not doing good for themselves either. They're enslaving themselves and their quote-unquote clients. So that's not a part of that vocation that we are to give, but I don't think anybody's involved in those things. If you are, please come talk to me afterwards. But we need to have this good product, good service that we are giving that ultimately loves our neighbors. And then we have good order and structure in which to do it. That we need to be reminded that doesn't matter where we are on that work flow chart, that we're placed exactly where we're supposed to be for that time. Doesn't mean you can't move up. Doesn't mean you shouldn't move up. You should desire to move up, right? If the Lord would give you the opportunity to do so and given you the gifts and the abilities to do so. But while we're in that spot, to use it for the glory of God. Ephesians 6, it talks about this, puts it this way, you know, talking about this master-servant relationship. It says to servants, be obedient to your masters. Why? Because you are servants of Christ, not as men pleasers, but God fearers. That's a good reminder for all of us as employees. We're not doing something just to receive the accolations of man and the praise of man, but we're doing so to receive the praise of God because we fear him. But then he goes on to say, Paul also says, and masters, do not treat your servants harshly, remembering that you have a master in heaven. That even if you're on the very top, very tippy top, you still have someone that's higher than you, which is the Lord. And how does he deal with you? Not harshly, not crudely, not rudely, but with much grace and mercy, caring for those that are under him. So too, you are to do the same to others. So the whole point of this, and then maybe have a couple minutes for questions, that we are to do our work unto God for the good of man, because that is what God is not only pleased and glorified in, but through it he is ordering, governing, preserving the earth. And he's also revealing himself to us through this aspect of vocation and work and calling. So the Lord is doing his work through you and me by just doing our jobs. So continue on, carry on with that new purpose, and hopefully even in it have greater pleasure because you're doing so to the glory of God. What thoughts or questions or comments do you have this morning? Yeah,
please. Interesting. I've been thinking about something. We've been talking a little bit about, do we work in heaven? Mm. Some people initially have this concept of heaven that, oh, we're just sitting back on fluffy white clouds and singing, and there's people playing lyres, and we're, you know, we're just having a good old time up there praising God. And it's come up recently that how it's said biblically that we will be working.
Mm-hmm.
I find the interesting connection that if we're creating his image, who works harder than God? He's always working every day, all the time. He's always working. So it kind of makes sense then we would also. But could you speak to that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to find it here. It's always when you're trying to look for something. No, it's very clear in Revelation 21 and 22 those, and it's a picture of the new heavens and the new earth. Right, it's when this idea of heaven coming down, earth being remade, us being here in our resurrected bodies, what is it that we be doing? We'll be working, yeah, unto the glory of God. Now without the you know harsh sweat of the brow and thorns and thistles that grow, it'll be more and I think even better than the Garden of Eden, where they were tending to things rather than having to manufacture things and force things there's a passage in here, and I'll find it and give it to you, where it talks about that the Lamb is on his throne, and not only were they giving worship, but they were going back and forth, and I don't know if it uses the word work or labor, but it's the idea of still providing service unto the Lamb. Now, one of the greatest services that we will provide is worship, but I think we'll continue to do it through work and labor. Yeah. Others? Yeah, Adam.
Kind of piggybacking on that, you know, when Christ had mentioned to be faithful over a few things here will ensure that you're faithful over much in the new heavens. So yeah. I look at that as, what are we going to be faithful over, responsible for? So I still, like you, thinking, well, there's much to be done.
Right. Yep, absolutely. And being reminded that, you know, as Jesus says, great is your reward in heaven. How often are we thinking, you know, I want to get my reward now, you know? So I'm going to do something that pays me a lot. Well, maybe not. You know what? I think stay-at-home moms are some of the most valuable people to the glory of God. They don't get paid a whole lot down here. but great is their reward in heaven as a result. So do not what pays you well, but what God has called you to for His glory and for His honor, because that will be much more valuable than what money you can make here below. Well, let's close in prayer. Our gracious God and Heavenly Father, we thank you this morning for your grace and your mercy and your love to us and the ways that you demonstrate that love very practically, O Lord, and all the things that you provide for us on a daily, moment-by-moment basis, O Lord. How much we take for granted and are ungrateful and unthankful. But Lord, would we at least pause this morning and give you thanks for your mercy and your grace and your love and your provision and your providence that is always at work, governing and ordering this earth. And thank you that we can be a part of that, Lord, in the small labor that we give unto you and for the good of our neighbor. Now, Lord, would we do the greatest work that we can do as creatures, give you glory and praise in the worship. For we pray this all in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you.